If you're a smoker or vapor, ready to make a change, you really only need one good reason. But with Zyn nicotine pouches, you'll discover many good reasons. Zyn is America's number one nicotine pouch brand. Plus, Zyn offers a robust rewards program. There are lots of options when it comes to nicotine satisfaction, but there's only one Zyn. Check out Zyn.com/find to find Zyn at a store near you. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
2025 marks the 60th anniversary of the first Honda Formula One victory in the 1965 Mexico Grand Prix. More than half a century later, the drive and innovation that powers Honda racing still inspires everything Honda does, from F1 victories to the Civic Hybrid being named the 2025 North American Car of the Year. Honda Racing is leading the charge when it comes to innovation. And here's where it gets really cool. Every Honda-powered F1 car is packed with sensors, hundreds of them, all feeding live data straight back to the Honda Racing team in Sakura, Japan. We're talking about real-time analysis that helps engineers squeeze out every ounce of performance on the track. And the amazing part? That same cutting-edge thinking is making its way into the cars we drive every day, thanks to the expertise of Honda Racing engineers. Their work has led to advances like the hybrid technology now used in Honda's consumer vehicles. The 2025 Civic Sedan Hybrid is engineered for fun, from the racetrack to your driveway. Learn more about the Civic and the latest Honda innovations at Honda.com.
New world champions.
The pirates of
the end of an era.
What started out as a leap of faith turned into a journey into the history books.
And emotional farewells.
Thank you, Ferrari. It's been a pleasure driving for you guys. What's a Ferrari said?
In Abu Dhabi, the 2024 Formula One season ended in style.
This is the moment that McLaren dreamed of. Lando Norris wins the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. McLaren are world champions of 2024. They win the constructors' title for the first time since 1998.
Congrats, everyone. Incredible. Well done, everyone. So proud of you all. You all deserve this. Thank you so much. It's been a special year. Next year is going to be my year too.
Welcome to the Yas Marina Circuit for F1 Nation's review of the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. I'm Tom Clarkson, and joining me in the paddock is F1 TV presenter Laura Winter and Sean Kelly, aka Virtual Statman. Guys, it's the end of a long season. We're down at McLaren. I've stuck to my seat because of the champagne that's been spilt on it. The celebrations are going. I mean, Laura, what a day.
What a day for McLaren. But do you know what? At one point in this race, lap one, turn one, it looked like it might actually not happen. And Ferrari, to have the race they did, they put everything out there. P2 and P3. P3 for Charles Leclerc from a P19. They threw absolutely everything at McLaren here, but ultimately the gap just too big. And McLaren have sealed the first Constructors' World Championship for the team in a quarter of a century or so. Phenomenal stuff. And the year they have had, the 24 months they have had, actually, if you look back to Bahrain 2023, absolutely dead last. And the upturn in form and plugging away and the commitment and determination from the team in a cost cap era as well is something special.
Yeah, absolutely. I think what stuck out for me today actually was not so much the start of the race, but at the end of the race. I thought it was a very classy gesture of Ferrari, the Ferrari mechanics to come over and congratulate the McLaren mechanics. I mean, we've had a lot of, more testy encounters in Abu Dhabi down the years. So it was nice to see a very friendly encounter, sort of made the best team win sort of attitude.
But Sean, that's the paddock. I mean, Mattia Binotto has just walked past us, gone into the McLaren hospitality area to congratulate the team. You know, on track it is incredibly fierce, but here in the paddock, particularly at the end of the season, I might add, let's not forget that Toto Wolff and Christian Horner were being very matey this time last year, but it is one big traveling circus. Now let's focus on our new world champions, and we'll start by hearing from the man whose victory here sealed McLaren's first constructors title since 1998, our race winner Lando Norris.
I'm very, very happy, just as I'm sure everyone in the team is. Today was a very special day for all of us. It was ours to lose today, and I'm sure at certain moments people thought that it was not far away from being lost. You know, two Ferraris up there, and Charles doing a great job to get back to the podium. You know, Oscar was super unlucky, he got taken out in turn one. So for a minute, my heart was like, oh God, it's not looking as likely. But, you know, if I just kept my head down and keep focus, I knew I could deliver and do what I got to do. So that's that. But, you know, the bigger picture of us winning a championship for the first time in 26 years, you wouldn't have thought that when you say the name McLaren, you know, it's it feels wrong. But for me to be part of that, for Oscar to be part of it, is something we're incredibly proud of. And delivering that for the team has put the biggest smiles possible on everyone's face. This is the biggest reward you can give back to everyone who designs the car, builds the car, gets the partners. You know, everyone has played such a big part. So just proud. Proud is my biggest thing. Of course, I'm happy I finished the season this way, but I'm way more happy for the team than I am for myself.
Well, Laura, as you said, not as straightforward as it looked. I think Lando must have felt pretty exposed after that lap one moment between Oscar Piastri and Max Verstappen, but he drove beautifully.
Yeah, he really did. And look, the lap one incident obviously punted Oscar Piastri towards the back, but then at that point, he had just one Ferrari to contend with until lap two, where Charles Leclerc had somehow climbed 11 places. The most, ultimately, by the end of the race, he's ever climbed to P8. And then the fight was suddenly on, and you suddenly think, well, hang on, if McLaren somehow don't nail this strategy, and if Ferrari do, we could be in a position where if Carlos wins this race with Charles Leclerc up there in P3, I believe that's a big enough point swing to have put it back towards Ferrari. It was in the balance for a number of laps and through that stint and through those pit stops in the middle of the race.
Yeah, I mean, there was a scenario briefly there where I thought if Ferrari were 1-3, Norris is second and Piastri's 10th, McLaren would have to get the fastest lap on the last lap to win the title. So it would have been that close. But thankfully, it didn't come to that. It was a long shot for Ferrari. Of course, they're winless here in Yas Marina. They've never been to a racetrack more times than this one without getting a win. In fact, Mario Wurg in the academy this morning was the first person to win a single-seater race in a Ferrari livery car ever at this track. So, yeah, it was a long shot for Ferrari. No team that's trailed going into the last round of the season has ever come through to win the Constructors' Championship. So the odds were always against them. But that first lap, when Max Verstappen did a lot of the heavy lifting for them, it was like, oh, no, we're not in Las Vegas anymore, but it was like they'd rolled a double six. It's like, whoa, okay, game on. We might have a championship on here. So some nervy moments there, but Lando never really looked flustered, did he?
Well, and it's the end of a long season, and you do get mechanical issues at this stage of the year as all of the power units in particular are getting towards the end of their mileage, and that, I think, was the main concern. But how cool was the pit crew? 2-second pit stop for Lando.
Oh, my goodness.
With all the pressure. You know, we talk about the improvements that McLaren have been through over the last 2 years. I thought those 2 seconds epitomised everything that's good about McLaren now compared to 5 years ago.
Yeah, McLaren have the joint best pit stop, fastest pit stop as Red Bull for this season in 1.9. Today, that was a pit stop that absolutely had to be delivered in the fastest way possible. The pressure going into that pit stop, ultimately all the big teams doing the one stop, just the one pit stop then to get right. My God, do they have to get that one right? So much pressure with the other protagonists in this race pitting at the same time as Lando Norris, lap 26 and lap 27. And I held my breath, but luckily not for too long. Just the 2 seconds.
Yeah, and at least they had the relative reassurance that safety cars are quite rare here. The last time we had a safety car was in, 2021? That was the last time we'd had a safety car interruption. It's very rare at this race. One of the cleanest racetracks for safety car interruption. So at least they weren't going to get hammered on that. It was just a case of executing when the time was right, and they came through.
Quite an interesting thing is happening around us, guys, in that there's a lot of orange. Everyone's got their Constructors' Champions hats and T-shirts on, but everyone at McLaren has got suitcases with them, and they're all heading out to Bahrain. Because let's not forget that this team is now owned by Bahrain, and they're having a big party at the King's Palace, I believe, in Bahrain. They're all heading on a plane. Zak Brown has booked out the flight. And the vibe is going to be amazing. Do you know what? There's one guy who I feel a tiny bit sorry for, in that he'll be thrilled with the season and the Constructors' Championship, but I think Oscar Piastri will be feeling, oh, if only I'd had a better day.
Yeah, look, we spoke to Oscar Piastri in our post-race show, and I was saying just before, how is he going to be feeling? A phenomenal season for Oscar, and a breakthrough one, a landmark one, and actually one in which he's achieved things, I think, almost ahead of time in his trajectory as, I think, a future world champion in this sport. And he said, look, phenomenal season, a night to forget. But I don't think that is going to play on his mind too much. He's celebrating with this team. He's had a brilliant year, as I said. He has safely navigated a season in which team orders have had to be applied, but equally, he has been treated as a fellow and joint number one driver to Lando Norris, which is a huge statement for the team to make. And I think, yeah, it's been a race to forget for him. He had a bit of a recovery drive. Verstappen obviously punted him at turn one. He then went into the back of Colapinto and got that 10-second penalty. So it's definitely not one that he's going to sort of replay when he gets home over the winter. But for him, it felt to me that he put it to bed. And look, he got the point in the end and was able to help the team in as small as way as he could.
2025 marks the 60th anniversary of the first Honda Formula One victory in the 1965 Mexico Grand Prix. More than half a century later, the drive and innovation that powers Honda racing still inspires everything Honda does, from F1 victories to the Civic Hybrid being named the 2025 North American Car of the Year. Honda Racing is leading the charge when it comes to innovation. And here's where it gets really cool. Every Honda-powered F1 car is packed with sensors, hundreds of them, all feeding live data straight back to the Honda Racing team in Sakura, Japan. We're talking about real-time analysis that helps engineers squeeze out every ounce of performance on the track. And the amazing part? That same cutting-edge thinking is making its way into the cars we drive every day, thanks to the expertise of Honda Racing engineers. Their work has led to advances like the hybrid technology now used in Honda's consumer vehicles. The 2025 Civic Sedan Hybrid is engineered for fun, from the racetrack to your driveway. Learn more about the Civic and the latest Honda innovations at honda.com.
Andrea Stella, team principal, joins us now. What's the overriding emotion for you? Relief, happiness?
Well, the emotion is, first of all, is intense. It's actually a fatigue when you win a championship. But above all, is I'm just happy for our people. You know, seeing the celebration in the garage, seeing how much everyone was willing to achieve this incredible result. The most important perspective to this achievement is that we are contributing to the legacy of McLaren. We are contributing to a success that was missing from 1998, and we were kind of aware that a success would have made history, and we wanted to be part of making history. But despite that, everyone stayed calm, very relaxed, focused, which made me very proud, and I think is also the reason why we were able to deliver. Because I just want to make one example. The most important pit stop of the season, it was one of our three fastest or something. I think this summarizes the maturity, the quality of the team. At the same time, it summarizes how tense this season was going to the last pit stop. And I would like to express my congratulations to Ferrari, because I think over the season there wasn't much to pick between Ferrari and McLaren, and it was more a matter of details, and it was such a close finish. And I'm sure in the future this is a battle that we will see again.
2025 then, obviously you'll be desperate to back this up, but you've got two brilliant drivers. Lando Norris tonight with a champion drive, but Oscar Piastri equally has had a coming of age year as well. How do you balance this heading in to a season in which you are the defending champions?
Well, in our conversation this morning, we said, let's get this job done, because if we get this job done, I think this is going to elevate even more the belief of the team, the level of the team, and the team will be able to give you a car for you guys to compete for the Drivers World Champion. Definitely, we go into 25 with this mindset, with this ambition, but we know that for the level of Formula One nowadays. You need to do an exceptional job. You need to raise the bar, as we keep saying internally. And that's our mindset. There's a part of me already thinking of 2025, but I know that we need to do better than what we have done so far because our competitors are very strong.
Andrea, not tonight. Please tell me you're not thinking about 2025 tonight.
That's my nature, though. It will be 1% of my thoughts. Let's say like this.
Have a great time. I know you've got to go.
Thank you very much.
Many congratulations.
Thank you. Have the best party as well.
1% of Andrea Stella is going to be thinking about 2025 tonight while they're on the plane and partying with the King of Bahrain.
That's champion commitment. Mentality, isn't it, though? You've got to always keep one eye looking ahead. And I actually saw Fred Vasseur outside the hospitality. I went up to him and you have that weird moment where you're not sure whether to say congratulations or commiserations, and I sort of said both to him, and he said oh, it's not tonight that we, I won't repeat the word he used, but it began with F, it's not tonight that we messed up, and he said it was Spain, Canada, Silverstone. He's already thinking back to where they drop points, to where they've lost this. He'll be looking ahead to 2025 as well. F1 never stops, does it? It doesn't give you a second, really, to rest on your laurels. And he will absolutely enjoy tonight. Andrea Stella will have a great time, but you can be sure that by maybe the following Monday, he'll be looking ahead already.
I just love the way that man goes motor racing. Every time I speak to him, I don't know whether you guys are the same, I feel I learn something new. He's very calm, very passionate, very human, but just knows everything. He leaves no stone unturned. Sorry for the cliche, but he really does. And I love the way he went straight in for that pit stop, because it did summarize in the pressure of the moment. And I hope he relaxes just for a nanosecond. And I love too the contrast between Andrea and Zak Brown. Zak Brown is the bravado of Zak, the money man who's on the podium and shouting. You could see the elation in Zak, couldn't you, on the podium? Whereas Andrea is much calmer. He's the guy on the pit wall that you want, isn't he?
I think back to that first race in 2023 in Bahrain, when the car wasn't very competitive, like worryingly uncompetitive. And I remember Andrea Stella not really offering up any excuses, or, you know, being trying to fob us off with, oh, it's this, that, and the other, nothing to do with me. That stuck out with me, particularly as they started to climb the grid. I mean, we all remember that Austria upgrade they had last year, which seemed to revolutionize the team. And we've all, those of us who watch Formula One with any regularity, we always hear about, oh, well, there's an upgrade coming, which is going to blow everybody away. And I treated that with a lot of cynicism. And I remember Mika Hakkinen saying, this will beat Red Bull. And lo and behold, here we are.
I remember that Mika comment, and I think it was mid-2023 and they were nowhere and it was a torrid year. And we all went, what on earth is Mika talking about? And look where we are now. They are world champions. They've turned things around in the space of basically, a year and a half, a season and a half. As I say, under a cost cap era as well. And just a word on Andrea Stella, looking at this season, because there were points in this season where you feared that McLaren would throw this away because of the way they were handling and managing their drivers' ambitions and their hesitance to put Lando as the outright priority number one driver and Oscar as the number two. There was a chance this season where they could have won both titles. They dropped points for Lando in a sense in not prioritising him sooner. But actually, when I spoke to the team and I spoke to Andrea Stella, he made it really clear that they wanted to win it in the McLaren way. And he said Lando would want us to win the title in this way as well. That constructor's title was always the priority. And Andrea Stella was so clear to me, I think it was in Baku, it would have been post Monza, post that Turn 1 incident between Oscar and Lando. And he was so crystal clear to me about how he was moving ahead with the drivers, and that Lando would be prioritised in 50-50 situations on track, but they would still treat Oscar with the respect he deserves. So he wasn't this going to be cast aside as this number two, but he was going to be nurtured, and he was going to be protected within the team, and felt this was a safe space for him as well. And I think that management of drivers is something that really impressed me with Andrea. And he's got a gentle way about him, hasn't he, in when he speaks to you. Like you said, you learn something. I really enjoy his interviews because they're clear, they're concise. There's a gentle firmness to them.
I think McLaren's processes have improved over the last 24 months beyond all measure. Just look at everything they're putting on the car seems to be working. If there's one area I feel they've been exposed this year, they're not as battle-hardened as the people they're now racing at the front of Formula One. Look at Red Bull. They've had so much thrown at them this year, yet actually they are still a brilliant racing team here at the track. I've been blown away by how Red Bull have managed to, the guys and girls in the garage and what they're delivering at the racetrack. They're so battle-hardened, and I feel McLaren have still got a bit to learn there, and I feel the papaya rules. They came up with all of these scenarios in the media, that most of which never actually happened, and I feel they created problems for themselves by talking about it in advance. And I think as a racing team at the front, you talk about what has happened when you have to, but don't start putting scenarios out there, because you're just going to tie yourself in a mess. And I feel there's little areas like that where they've been exposed, but with every race that goes by, they're learning. And I think this is now the team of the moment and of 2025. And as the grid closes up, they are bang on my bet for the Constructors' Championship next year. Oscar Piastri is bulletproof in a race situation when he's not being turfed out the way by Max Verstappen. But isn't he? He's so consistent and unflustered. Lando Norris, brilliantly fast. We've seen a few peaks and troughs this year, but he's got more and more consistent. Look at the drive he did today. Didn't put a wheel wrong. Look at the drive he did in Singapore. Didn't put a wheel wrong. We're getting more consistency from Lando now. So when he says next year's going to be my year, you're a brave man to bet against him.
Yeah, well, certainly when it comes to the Constructors' Championship, we're used to these sort of dynasties developing. I mean, it's been, I think, 15 years, really, since a team has not won back-to-back championships, because we went from Red Bull in the Vettel era to Mercedes, now back to Red Bull, and now here we are with McLaren. So you would certainly suggest that we would expect a continuity in that department. I think the big thing for me is the development of Oscar Piastri, because this year, although they've been very close in races at times, I mean, Norris put him in the shade in qualifying. He out-qualified him 20-4. That's a worse record than Lance Stroll and Fernando Alonso. And Lance Stroll gets a lot of stick all the time. And Oscar could not out-qualify Lando Norris. You know, love him and all, but that's the numbers. So I think that's the first point of call for Oscar over the winter, is to try and get close to him over one lap, or try and beat him over one lap, because that sets the table for what comes next. There's certainly, I don't think there's a lot of questions over Oscar's speed. You know, we knew when he came into Formula One, having won, F3 and F2, very few drivers have done that. Obviously, Gabriel Bortoleto added his name to that list this weekend. But Lando is obviously blazingly quick over one lap, and that to me would be the thing that Oscar needs to address in the off season.
Yeah, and Oscar said to us in the post show, you know, there are things that are a work in progress still, and he is still so young in this sport relatively to his teammate and to others on the grid, and equally now he's a bit older than some of the ones who are joining as well. I think to your point, Tom, as well, about that management of the drivers throughout the season and the kind of strategy calls, and McLaren being less battle hardy than Red Bull, I think that probably has been maybe their weakness, is that, and I think this is something that both Zach and Andrea have said to me through the season, is that they weren't used to winning. They weren't used to being put into winning situations where they had to pull the trigger and make the crucial calls from the pit wall that put them in the winning position to get the race result over the line. And I think that has been something that has progressed through the season. And we saw from Baku, Singapore. We then saw, of course, here as well, just cooler heads on the pit wall, which is really important. It's definitely a learning I think they've taken on this season. But when you aren't used to winning and you aren't used to being put in situations where you have to make a split second decision, and if you get it wrong on the pit wall, you are in P4 rather than in P1, that's where they're now at. I think you almost think if you started this season or the second half of this season again, where would Lando Norris versus Max Verstappen be with all that Lando has learned in the last 12 races? That's something in a parallel universe somewhere I'd like to know the results of.
Laura, I can't wait to see Lando and Max going at it wheel to wheel next year.
Or Lando and George, or George and Max. Honestly,
you were talking about Max,
yeah.
And I just think, you know, that's where I think Lando will put his hand up and say that's where he's come up short this year in their wheel to wheel battles. And I can't wait to see. I do think there will be an accident at some point where he just goes, sorry, Max, you're not coming through. Or, no, you're not going to push me wide.
We saw a bit of that in Austin, right? We saw a little bit in Mexico as well, where actually Lando put himself in a position on the track where he wouldn't move the inch he probably needed to make sure that he wasn't run off or Max didn't make contact. I think he is putting himself in positions on the track where he's trying to say to Max, this is my piece of tarmac.
I love Max because he will always go for an opportunity. We saw it at turn one in this race, even with the championship done. Like, oh, I can come up the inside here. It didn't work out. But you always know he's good for having a go at it. Will next season, if he doesn't have an advantage, if McLaren come out of the gate as well as they did the second half of this season, will Max be forced into a situation where he has to go, is this worth me fighting over? Do I want to bank the 18 points for second place or risk 0 points in a collision to try and win it? And we haven't really seen Max have to do that very often lately.
And penalty points, because Max got 2 today in that collision with Oscar Piastri. That takes his total to 8. And the first don't expire until June next year. And he joked in the pen, I think I saw, that hopefully they'll come in time for his paternity leave and he can have a race off. For goodness sake, he's just another level, isn't he? But that's something to contend with, that actually, will we get to a point where we see Max with a race ban? There's 2 more contact incidents like that we've seen tonight, season with a race ban, and we've got a lot of races before June.
I can't see him doing anything different as well.
He's not going to change his driving style, is he?
No, that's...
You heard him on the race radio today. Why don't they give me 20 seconds next time? I think he then used the word idiots.
They were
made his feelings clear.
Yeah, and they were just applying the rules, actually, Max. Look, now this title means a huge amount to everyone in Woking, but particularly the man who's come to join us now, Mark Norris, the Director of Commercial Trackside Operations here at McLaren. You were here 26 years ago when McLaren won the last title. I mean, what does this one mean?
Well, it's been a long time coming. It's you know, it's incredible. Someone actually showed me a picture this weekend of it in Japan when Mika crossed in the line, and there's a picture of me standing over the pit wall cheering when we won both the drivers and constructors that year. And it's just amazing. I knew we would get back there and win again, but I didn't think it'd take us 26 years. So
does this one feel sweeter somehow because it's taken so long?
It just feels super special, you know. Words can't describe what it is like when you're called world champions. And, you know, winning races is one thing, but being a world champion, it just takes it to another level. It's just so proud of who we are, what we've done, what we've achieved, and the people that work for McLaren, not only just here trackside, but also back in the factory as well. All of the sponsors, everybody that's part of made what today has happened happen.
Has there ever been a moment in the last quarter of a century where you've actually doubted it? I mean, 2017, when you finished P9.
Yeah, look, we've had some dark times. But yeah, I always knew the team would be back. I just knew we'd be back there. So yeah, you know, we've had our ups and downs. It's been a roller coaster, but we're here. We're back at the top again.
And you're heading to Bahrain.
And we're heading to Bahrain. So I've now got to go because there's a plane waiting on the runway for us.
Mark, have a great time.
Thank you very much
for dropping by.
No, brilliant. Thank you very much indeed.
Cheers, guys. Have a great time.
2025 marks the 60th anniversary of the first Honda Formula One victory in the 1965 Mexico Grand Prix. More than half a century later, the drive and innovation that powers Honda racing still inspires everything Honda does, from F1 victories to the Civic Hybrid being named the 2025 North American Car of the Year. Honda Racing is leading the charge when it comes to innovation. And here's where it gets really cool. Every Honda-powered F1 car is packed with sensors, hundreds of them, all feeding live data straight back to the Honda Racing team in Sakura, Japan. We're talking about real-time analysis that helps engineers squeeze out every ounce of performance on the track. And the amazing part? That same cutting-edge thinking is making its way into the cars we drive every day, thanks to the expertise of Honda Racing engineers. Their work has led to advances like the hybrid technology now used in Honda's consumer vehicles. The 2025 Civic Sedan Hybrid is engineered for fun, from the racetrack to your driveway. Learn more about the Civic and the latest Honda innovations at honda.com. What about Ferrari then? They finished the season in style with a double podium as Carlos Sainz secured P2 in his final race for the team, and Charles Leclerc fought back from 19th to 3rd. It wasn't enough to snatch the title away from McLaren, but what a special way for Carlos to end this chapter of his career. Let's hear from them now, starting with Carlos.
hasn't been an easy weekend for me, obviously, knowing it was the last one, but a bit emotional, I'm not going to lie. I would say it was more emotional the last time that I jumped in the car, in the grid. I knew that was obviously going to be my last race with the group of people that I've enjoyed these last 4 years. The last time that I would jump in a Ferrari car, probably, and I was just feeling emotional, and I tried to remind myself to try and enjoy the race as much as possible and to give the absolute maximum for this team. I'm not going to lie, my last laps, as much as I was pushing like hell for this team, and I was already starting to feel things in the car and trying to say, remember how this feels, because tomorrow and Tuesday I need to remember why is this car quick in this corner and why does it feel good, because I know probably what I'm going to find tomorrow and Tuesday needs some margin of improvement in the corners that I was feeling the car. So this just sums up that I'm already looking also ahead. I'm extremely motivated for the challenge that I have ahead of me. Today is a day to try and enjoy as much as possible with the team as my last day in red. We still have some days in Maranello coming up, but obviously my competitive mind is already looking forward to Monday and Tuesday and to see how I can make that Williams car faster.
Carlos, thank you for that. Charles, let's come to you now. P19 to P3, phenomenal evening's work by you. Just how satisfied are you?
Not really. I mean, again, I'm of course really happy about the race, but the disappointment is a lot bigger. You don't win or lose a championship in the last race, but obviously it's over the course of the season and after every single race, and McLaren has just done a better job than us, and congratulations to them. But it obviously hurts when you get to the last race, you know there's an opportunity. But after such a good first lap, the hopes were high, and we just came short of our dream, which was to win the Constructors, so it hurts.
So just bigger picture, McLaren have clearly done a great job this year. How happy are you with the season that Ferrari has put together?
I'm very happy because the first part of the season wasn't easy. We were definitely not the fastest car. We were actually struggling for performance. The second part of the season, we've done an incredible job, mostly for improving the car in terms of pace. We've picked up a lot of pace. We were a lot closer to the guys in front. And actually, on some races, we were probably the fastest car, which this is thanks to the team in Maranello, thanks to Carlos, thanks to me and the team back at the track as well to have done such a great job with the new upgrades. But I think the highlight of this season has definitely been the execution. Because to be fighting for the Constructors at the end of the year until the very last race, if you look at the performance we've had in the first part of the year, that's where I think we've done a particularly good job. So on that, I'm very proud.
Bittersweet, isn't it, for Ferrari? They've done absolutely everything they could. Tonight, I think, as I mentioned earlier, Fred picked out a number of races in which they dropped the ball. They took the car in a direction it absolutely couldn't go in. They had to bring that back. They had to find an upgrade that worked. They had to get going again. They had that peak in Mexico. Please don't play in the audio here of me going, they're going to be world champions, because I hold my hands up and say I absolutely was wrong. They were not, although it was close at one point. There was a chance in Qatar where we could have wrapped this championship up early. They fought and fought and fought. They brought it here to Abu Dhabi, but just come short. And you heard how much it meant to Charles Leclerc on the radio. Even in the dying laps, he was saying, if we stay like this, are we the champions? No, you're not. And then the expletives, you know, he's gutted. You saw him after getting out the car as well. They fought and fought so hard this season. And for Carlos, actually, it's gutting, isn't it? Because what a way that would have been for him to seal his career at Ferrari and to move to Williams, knowing that he's going there with... as a champion. He's a runner-up now. It's still fantastic. He's won a number of races in style, but it's gutting for Ferrari. But as I say, it's not tonight that they lost this.
Well, Laura, you weren't the only one who thought Ferrari was going to be the Constructors champions. I remember Tom and myself talking in Austin about this and thinking, oh, maybe Ferrari are the favorites now. Ultimately, it hasn't happened. I think that's the beauty when we look back at this season in retrospect, is how it swung. It didn't just swing back and forth between two constructors. And when we had four constructors, and it was like a merry-go-round, it's been fantastic second half of the year. For Carlos, I mean, second place, I don't want to be a doomsayer. That may have been Carlos Sainz's last podium in Formula One, because you're going to Williams. Well, there's one strain of thought that, okay, you're being realistic. But remember, McLaren were in Williams' situation not so long ago. So perhaps, you know, Carlos Sainz's move will look inspired down the line. Right now, you're thinking, okay, He might have to wait a little while. But Charles Leclerc had a great day. I mean, 16 positions gained. That's the most positions Charles Leclerc's ever gained in a Grand Prix. So, you know, from 19th on the grid, you just, at the start of the race, we thought this situation's hopeless. And then very quickly, we thought, oh, well, maybe it's not over yet. So they did at least give McLaren a scare more than they thought they were going to get.
And what about Carlos? I mean, you know, already thinking about Williams in the closing laps of his final race for Ferrari. It sort of shows that winning mentality he has and the work ethic and how, you know, James Vowles has said many times this year how Carlos improves every team that he drives for. And when you think that he's already thinking about Williams whilst he's still in a Ferrari, you can sort of start to understand it, can't you?
They have absolutely no chill, do they, F1 drivers? They're already thinking about 2025 and half an eye on the regs in 2026. But that's a pretty amazing thing. And also, just once again, highlighting the capacity these F1 drivers have to have those thoughts while they're hurtling at 200k an hour around this track. But no, I mean, he's already looking ahead to Williams. And on paper, as things stand at the moment, yes, you would say this could be Carlos Sainz's final podium. But given that mentality, given the presence of James Vowles there, that I think the competition that will happen between Alex Albon and Carlos Sainz, because that's a really strong driver pairing.
Driver pairing in Formula One, if you listen to James Vowles, Laura.
If they have the car beneath them, it well could be. Yeah. You can't say it's impossible that we'll see the Williams begin to just reboot and grow once again, and it needs that from the position they finished this season in, because it's been a really torrid run of races for them.
Yeah, I'm not running down Williams' ability to come back and win the Constructors' Championship. We should remember that Williams' last Constructors' Championship was the year before McLaren's last Constructors' Championship. So it is possible to rebound from these things, and we saw how quickly McLaren were capable of doing it last year in the face of our personal cynicism that they could do it. They did do it. And Tom, as you mentioned, you know, the Carlos Sainz situation, I mean, that's why they wanted him in the team. That's why, you know, while the hype train was going about Franco Colapinto, who I did think did a pretty good job standing in, Franco Colapinto's not going to provide that sort of feedback of years and years and years at Ferrari, winning races and so on, coping with the pressure. You know, it's going to be a big psychological upgrade, you know, as well as a technical one and a driving one.
We've eulogised already about McLaren. What is our feeling as a team about the year that Ferrari have constructed? I thought it was interesting on our preview show to this race, Pedro De La Rosa was saying that he thinks actually Ferrari, with the car they've had, have constructed a better season than McLaren have with the car that McLaren have had. McLaren have had the fastest car, Ferrari haven't, apart from very select races. Do you agree with that? Do you think they could be proud of what they've done in Maranello?
I think that's an excellent point that Pedro makes. He makes some good points, doesn't he, does Pedro? I think that's right. And look, Max Verstappen was saying if I'd had a McLaren, I'd have sealed up the Drivers' World title a lot earlier. They have had a rocket ship beneath them at a number of races, and they have fumbled a number of results through this season. This is McLaren. You question if Carlos and Charles had the car McLaren had given their drivers and the pit wall that Ferrari have now developed, because don't forget, as we said, Ferrari were once the butt of these strategy jokes. We now look at McLaren's pit wall and the way they've implemented certain things this season, and they have made vast improvements in recent races. But you question whether McLaren should have had this wrapped up sooner, whether this could have come to the final race if perhaps they'd implemented, as I mentioned earlier, some of those winning ways and getting used to winning again and knowing how to pull the trigger and be ruthless. Ferrari, I think, should be incredibly proud of what they've achieved this season. You know, they will be probably 90% proud and 10% furious about it, because they're born winners and want to win, and it's in the Ferrari blood, and they've not won either since 2008. So it's it's a funny one, but it's a good point by Pedro that actually as a whole this year, I mean, on paper, Lando Norris has beaten Charles Leclerc.
Yeah, I think it's funny that Ferrari was strong contenders for this Constructors' Championship and yet never led it at any point. It was only Red Bull and McLaren who led it. So, you know, I think it was a good job. And again, it's part of this swings and roundabouts. We're so used to two teams battling out for a championship. And this year we had three and a half at times early on. I think they can be reasonably content. Some of the howlers that you mentioned, you know, putting Leclerc on dry tyres in the wet in Montreal and wet tyres in the dry in Silverstone. You know, it's like, okay, I feel like in the second half of the season that went away. You know, the propensity of Ferrari to drop a clanger. Perhaps that's the Fred Vasseur effect. Maybe 12 months from now we'll be sitting at this table saying what an effect Fred Vasseur has had at Ferrari.
Laura, you mentioned Charles, and yes, he's finished behind Lando Norris. They're both going to be going to Kigali in Rwanda to pick up their trophies later in the week. But it is still Charles' best season in Formula 1. Let's not forget that. 13 podiums. He's won at home in Monaco. He's won the Italian Grand Prix at Monza. I feel he's made progress as a driver. We've seen more. We talk about consistency a lot, and I feel we've seen more consistency from Charles this year.
If there was a trophy for wins that made the most fans cry, Charles might have won that one. Monaco, obviously, the meaning behind that, the emotion behind that, and then to win in a Ferrari at Monza, making the one stop work, it's poetry. It's beautiful, isn't it?
I'm welling up.
I know. Well, don't, because I already have cried today, so I need to just keep it together. But no, Charles Leclerc, he had to have this kind of season, though, no? He's going to have a seven-time world champion, Lewis Hamilton, lining up alongside him next year. He absolutely has to be able to stand tall against Lewis. Yes, he's Ferrari's prodigal son, and yes, he's the number one driver in that sense. It was never going to be Charles who was going to make way for Lewis, was it? But he's got to now go wheel-to-wheel with Lewis Hamilton.
Around the outside goes Lewis Hamilton in the left-hand side. He goes straight, and he's roared around the outside to take fourth away from George Russell. What a move!
And that's the end of an era. Got to say, mate, it's been epic work over here.
Lewis, that was the drive of a world champion.
We dreamed alone, but together we believed. What started out as a leap of faith turned into a journey into the history books. I love you guys. I really, really do.
We love you too, and you're always going to be part of that family. And if we can't win, you should win.
So Lewis Hamilton fought back from P16 to finish P4 in his 246th and final race for Mercedes. So after winning 6 of his 7 world championships and 84 races with the team, scoring 153 podiums and 78 poles, how does he feel now the most successful era in Formula One history is over?
To be able to come back through at the end to fourth, I'm really, really, really happy with that, and mega job for the team. And it's the last time I'm going to be in a cockpit of Mercedes, you know, so just trying to enjoy that moment, because it's like, it's history now. All my races, they've all been powered by Mercedes and all the success we've had. And so I just sat there to think about all that and really contemplate just how great a journey it's been.
I know you've got some fun stuff to look forward to, but how much are you going to miss this team, this family?
Oh, I'm going to miss, I mean, I can't tell you how much I'm going to miss them. It's going to be a huge amount, because I've worked with them every day for, you know, the past 12 years. So, but there's a lot of love within this team, and that's not going anywhere.
Many people thought it was a mistake, him leaving McLaren and joining Mercedes. How wrong we all were. What do you, Laura, feel about him leaving Mercedes and going to Ferrari?
It was the bombshell news, wasn't it, that's sort of served as a catalyst for what ended up being the most topsy-turvy, upside-down rollercoaster season we've had. I've loved it. I enjoy it as a storyline. And I think every Formula One driver will want to drive for Ferrari at some point in their career. Mercedes have seemed at times over the last, let's be honest, since 2022 and the new regs, rudderless. They've seemed directionless. The car has the narrowest operating window, really. And Lewis Hamilton has not been getting on with that car at all. George Russell has been able to extract something from it in recent races and through the last two seasons. And in the end, actually, Lewis Hamilton has had more points, scored more points for Mercedes than George Russell in their time together, courtesy of that fourth place today. They came in equal on points. It feels to me time for Lewis to move on. It feels like it could be the perfect closure to a storied career. A win in Ferrari, dare we dream, an 8th world title for Lewis Hamilton in red, driving for Ferrari, or even winning the Constructors' Championship for Ferrari, would be a wonderful way for him to close out the career, rather than it fizzling to this sort of nothingness where a 7-time world champion is delighted with P4. you know, a Lewis back in 2021, that's not the mentality he'd probably have had.
From P16, I think he would have been.
Correct, it is a recovery drive, correct. But do you see what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
I think it feels time for me that Lewis feels ready to go.
What did you think of him wearing red when he came into the track?
Good question.
I thought it was a very good colour on him. Why? What were you suggesting?
He's sort of worn, I think, silvery black into red through the weekend. So he's kind of expressing himself as he does through his fashion. We know he loves to do that. He's sort of showing the transition symbolically, isn't he? I don't think if I was part of the Mercedes team, I'll be honest, I'd have loved it. I'd have possibly felt maybe a little put out by it. It was quite the statement, wasn't it? It's an interesting one.
Yeah, indeed. And moving to Ferrari, on the one hand, if I judge this purely on statistical history, this could be the biggest dud in F1 history. Drivers over the age of 40 don't win races. One win in the last 54 years for a driver over the age of 40.
Nigel Mansell.
Very good.
Adelaide, 1994. Next question.
2 points to the man to my right. Over 40-year-olds don't win races. And yet, you know, we've seen Alonso come very close in the last 18 months. There are some out there who've said to me, is this going to turn into Nigel Mansell at McLaren, where, you know, aging British hero joins team?
No.
And I said, I think you've got to bear in mind, we're talking about statistically also the most successful driver in the history of this sport. If anyone can go against the grain and smash the statistical records, this is the guy. So it can go one of two ways. And I think today reminded us again, there is no problem with him on race pace. He can still mix it.
Yeah, for sure.
I think he's had an incredibly difficult year.
Yeah.
All the time, he's known that he's leaving. Lewis is an emotional guy. He really is. He's not the cool, calculating Finn of Mika Hakkinen. No. He has always been incredibly emotional. A lot of it has been born out of passion. And you hear him on a slowdown lap. I love you, boys. I love you, Bono, after the win at Silverstone earlier this year. And I think, actually, he will gel beautifully with Ferrari. I think the passion will motivate him. I think the Tifosi will love him. You mentioned, Laura, I think this is the perfect time.
It feels right, doesn't it? On that Silverstone win as well, don't forget, he stood on the grid as the winner there. One of the highlights of the year, by the way. And he said, I woke up every morning for a long time and didn't think I was good enough anymore. And I thought that was quite an extraordinary admission for a 7-time world champ to make when he just won again. And you could almost sense this huge sense of relief that he'd finally got another win again, and he'd done it at the place where it matters and means the most to him as well. It's a beautiful story, but I found that sentence really illuminating and actually gave us a bit of an insight into his psychology this year.
And smart enough to doubt himself. I think a lot of drivers will go, it's the car. It's not me, it's the car. But I think he's searching for answers within himself, which I think is very encouraging as we look forward.
Yeah, and I also want to say that, I mean, this, as Laura says, it's the end of a 3-year cycle of, for Lewis Hamilton, is mediocrity. And, well, it's mediocrity for Mercedes as well, relative to what came before. I actually was more impressed by Lewis Hamilton in 2022, when suddenly there was that drop in performance. And he never gave up. He really, really dug in. Now, think of the situation. You're 103 wins into it, 7 world championships, etc., etc. Do you really want to sit here for 12 months and try and sort a car out? And yet he's stuck with the program. And I find that so admirable that someone with that much success would not just throw the toys out the pram and say, oh, you fix it. That, to me, says, okay, the fire's still burning. You know, he's not going through the motion. Yeah, okay, maybe there might have been a little bit in recent weeks of thinking, okay, I can see the end of this era coming. But I'm sure he'll go into next season thinking, let's start again. Let's go back to how I was with a new perspective. And we saw in this race today, Lewis Hamilton can still race. There's no question about that. Can he qualify? I mean, we saw, you know, obviously what happened here this weekend maybe wasn't entirely his fault. But we saw in Las Vegas when he got to Q3, you know, he made a mess of Q3 and ended up 10th on the grid, and Russell was on pole. Perhaps he could have won that race with a bit better qualifying. So going up against Leclerc, maybe the fastest guy over one lap in Formula One right now, dare I say it. We might be getting judgmental based upon qualifying positions and forgetting that, well, that's not how we hand the points out. But I'm sure Lewis will be going in, much as we said earlier with Oscar Piastri and Lando Norris, thinking, there has to be a way to get unlock more pace in Q3, because otherwise I'm going to have a major problem with this guy on the other side of the garage.
2025 marks the 60th anniversary of the first Honda Formula One victory in the 1965 Mexico Grand Prix. More than half a century later, the drive and innovation that powers Honda Racing still inspires everything Honda does, from F1 victories to the Civic Hybrid being named the 2025 North American Car of the Year. Honda Racing is leading the charge when it comes to innovation. And here's where it gets really cool. Every Honda-powered F1 car is packed with sensors, hundreds of them, all feeding live data straight back to the Honda Racing team in Sakura, Japan. We're talking about real-time analysis that helps engineers squeeze out every ounce of performance on the track. And the amazing part? That same cutting-edge thinking is making its way into the cars we drive every day, thanks to the expertise of Honda Racing engineers. Their work has led to advances like the hybrid technology now used in Honda's consumer vehicles. The 2025 Civic Sedan Hybrid is engineered for fun, from the racetrack to your driveway. Learn more about the Civic and the latest Honda innovations at honda.com. 2025 marks the 60th anniversary of the first Honda Formula One victory in the 1965 Mexico Grand Prix. More than half a century later, the drive and innovation that powers Honda Racing still inspires everything Honda does, from F1 victories to the Civic Hybrid being named the 2025 North American Car of the Year. Honda Racing is leading the charge when it comes to innovation. And here's where it gets really cool. Every Honda-powered F1 car is packed with sensors, hundreds of them, all feeding live data straight back to the Honda Racing team in Sakura, Japan. We're talking about real-time analysis that helps engineers squeeze out every ounce of performance on the track. And the amazing part? That same cutting-edge thinking is making its way into the cars we drive every day, thanks to the expertise of Honda Racing engineers. Their work has led to advances like the hybrid technology now used in Honda's consumer vehicles. The 2025 Civic Sedan Hybrid is engineered for fun, from the racetrack to your driveway. Learn more about the Civic and the latest Honda innovations at honda.com.
Well, as we head towards the end of the show, we have to mention the battle for P6. And what a great job Alpine have done.
Yeah, talk about surprise package at the end of the year, popping up with that 2-3 in Sao Paulo that made all the difference. It was nice to see, certainly, for a team that's been through a lot, a team that was stone last at the start of the season. I mean, they were almost becoming a laughing stock, a butt of the jokes, that sort of thing, and to see them turn it around. And that Sao Paulo result, obviously there was a bit of a tailwind attached, rode their luck a bit to get that performance. But there's been a lot of other performance lately that have been legit. Pierre Gasly's qualifying in recent weeks has been fantastic. I think Gasly's three best results of the season have come in the last four races of the year. So Alpine seem to have weathered the storm and have at least climbed back out of mediocrity into competitiveness. Obviously, remains to be seen how Jack Doohan beds in with the team. Obviously, having a practice Grand Prix this weekend won't have hurt. But it is nice to see a team, much as McLaren did at the start of last year when they were slowest, they've now righted the ship. Now, am I saying Alpine are going to win next year's Constructors' Championship? I wouldn't go that far just yet. But at least they're back in the game.
The trend is upwards, isn't it, since they introduced that upgrade for the Austin Grand Prix. And you're absolutely right about Pierre Gasly. He's not only delivering over one lap, but I love the way he kept George Russell behind him in the Grand Prix here. He's a great racing driver. I feel these last three or four races is the best we've ever seen of Pierre Gasly.
Yeah,
next year.
Yeah, I think, you know, we saw, I mean, 2021, he had a great year with AlphaTauri. But certainly, again, it's another example. I mean, I mentioned Lewis sticking with the program when the chips were down. I mean, Alpine have had to do that all year. And it was great to see them duly rewarded. It must be great motivation for them to go into this, the winter time, knowing that, okay, we are not stone last, the slowest team. We've made progress. What we're doing is actually making a difference. We're moving up the grid. Maybe happy days are here again.
They'll be delighted, won't they? I think what I've loved about that battle for P6 is that we actually see the physical battles on track between Pierre Gasly and Nico Hülkenberg, and then when Vicar were kind of in the mix as well, Yuki Tsunoda getting up there, Liam Lawson getting up there. We're seeing these battles out on track, literally as Gasly overtakes Hülkenberg and vice versa, the swing of points we're seeing physically play out. One word on Haas actually as well, they'd have taken P7 I think at the start of this year. Ayo Komatsu came in and said, don't have any expectations, we are stone last, we are nowhere, and they have fought back and fought back and fought back, and they've steadied the ship at Haas and they've come out with a P7. I think it will sting initially, you know, to lose out by a small margin, but ultimately I think they will be delighted that P7 is where they will start next season with a brand new driver lineup.
You know what stung for Nico Hülkenberg tonight? Pierre Gasly moved ahead of him and into 10th in the championship. No Alpine driver was in the top 10 in the championship for the entire 2024 season until tonight. And Pierre Gasly, with that late run, pipped Nico Hülkenberg to 10th in the championship. Haas have only ever had a driver finish in the top 10 in the championship once, and it's still once as of now.
And Hülkenberg did say, actually, coming into the weekend, that we've won already, even if we finish P7. It's been a great result for the team. Now, on the topic of any other business, let's talk about a few other drivers. Another bad day for Sergio Perez, the first retirement of the Grand Prix, and we sit here tonight in the paddock wondering if we've watched him race his last Grand Prix.
Yeah, I know. I mean, going into this, that was very much the thinking. The team weren't making it clear. They're obviously having this meeting on the Monday after Abu Dhabi about his future. Perez has been pretty bullish in response to questions about his future in recent times, and sort of saying, I have a contract for 2025, I will be on the grid for 2025. And that's kind of been his steadfast approach and his response. I think Lawrence Barreto spoke to him in the pen and he tweeted out saying that it's the first time he's heard him waver on that after tonight. And the quote here says, at the moment, it's all I know on whether he has a seat next year. I've got a contract to drive. It will be down to reaching an agreement, hopefully, see what the team wants to do. I think that's the first time we've heard it be a little bit less than certain from Perez himself.
Reach an agreement? They did that back in June, I thought.
Exactly. It now seems, you know, I think the gossip around the paddock is that Liam Lawson will be in that seat and Isaac Hadjar will move into the V card. That is what people are saying tonight. We know that the world of F1 can move very quickly, because a few weekends ago, Tom, we were saying that Franco Colapinto will be driving for VCARB. So we know things move very quickly and it's a bit of a revolving door, but it isn't looking very good for Perez. And I think the regret that I would have there is that Sergio Perez, if that is the decision the team are going to make, make it yesterday and give him the send-off and say this will be his last race and let him say goodbye. He's an 8-time Grand Prix winner. He deserves a bit more than just fizzling out over the winter, you know?
Rewind to Singapore. Daniel Ricciardo leaving VCARB. We had exactly the same conversation after that race.
Well, could it be that Checo hasn't agreed to a send-off? I mean, maybe he had some influence in that, and that, hang on a minute, this isn't my send-off. We haven't reached an agreement, whatever that agreement's going to be. I would say that as much as I admire Checo, I think he's a great guy, and as much joy as the Mexican fans have brought to F1, the writing is on the wall. I mean, there's no really way to sugarcoat it that his performances really have cost Red Bull a Constructors' Championship. And much as it was with Valtteri Bottas at Mercedes, when they were the best team and they were finishing 1-2, there's no need to change anything. And of course, Red Bull were 1-2 in the championship last year. But when it starts to be 1-7, you know, you start to think, well, we can't really tolerate that performance for too long. So I understand why Red Bull are thinking, well, it might be time to change something here. Maybe it won't change anything. Maybe Liam Lawson will get in the car and find the exact same problems. It's not like Pierre Gasly and Alex Albon haven't got anecdotes along those lines as well. But it's probably time for a change.
So the top 10 looked like this. Norris won his fourth race of the season ahead of the Ferrari pairing of Sainz and Leclerc. Hamilton was fourth in his final race for Mercedes ahead of teammate Russell in fifth. World champion Verstappen was sixth ahead of Gasly in seventh, Hülkenberg eighth, Alonso ninth and Piastri tenth.
The top 10 in the Drivers' Championship ended like this. Verstappen was crowned 2024 World Champion back in Las Vegas, but Norris confirmed his P2 here in Abu Dhabi ahead of Leclerc in third. Piastri finished fourth, just 2 points ahead of Sainz in fifth. The Mercedes pair were sixth and seventh, Russell 22 points ahead of Hamilton. Perez was eighth, Alonso ninth, and Gasly's P7 in the race leapfrogged him into the top 10 for the first time this year. In the Constructors' Championship, McLaren have ended a 26-year drought to be the top of the pile, coming home 14 points ahead of Ferrari and 77 points ahead of Red Bull in third. Mercedes have been locked into fourth for many months, as have Aston Martin in fifth. And Alpine have won the battle for P6, coming home 7 points ahead of Haas in 7th and 19 points ahead of Vicarb in 8th. Williams ended up 9th and Sauber were 10th.
The moment has arrived for the Brazilian driver, Gabriel Bortoleto. He's the Formula 2 champion of 2024. Back-to-back titles in F3 and F2 for the boy from Brazil. He's heading to Formula 1 as the champion.
Let's go! Thanks for the season, man. That was amazing.
Gabriel Bortoleto is the 2024 Formula 2 champion after finishing P2 in both the sprint and the feature race here in Abu Dhabi this weekend. With just half a point separating him and title rival Isaac Hadjar going into the weekend, this was the closest title fight in F2 history. But a problem for Hadjar at the start of Sunday's feature ended his hopes. So how does Gabriel feel to have got the job done?
F2 champions. sounds good, and super proud of that. F3 and F2 in a row has been a big achievement for me, and I think a dream since I was a kid to do well in junior formulas and get to F1 like this. I couldn't expect anything better.
What were your expectations coming into this F2 season?
I mean, a top three was probably something that I kept in my mind as realistic. By having a very good progression, by having a good car with a good team, but winning a championship as a rookie is the same thing I said in F3 last year. You never imagine that. There is a lot of experience and very good drivers around with good teams as well. So you need actually to do a mega job to do that. And I'm proud that I can say we did it as a team.
Did a mega job. And of course, all eyes on Formula One now. You've got what? Big celebrations tonight. And then you're testing for Sauber on Tuesday here at Yas Marina, aren't you?
Exactly. Testing with them. First official F1 test for me. Yeah, let's see how it goes in F1, but I'm excited to do this step up and start learning new things.
And what a great time to be joining Sauber. Bottas in particular, going so much better this weekend. Points for Joe last weekend in Qatar as well.
You see, they got better when I signed, even if I didn't do anything yet. Well, we're going to say it's good. It's good to see them performing very well. It makes me very happy and confident for next year, but we still have a very long way ahead. A lot of new things coming up. Audi joining us. It's going to be a very interesting project that I'm super, super proud of being part of as a first Audi driver ever. And I have one of the best projects ahead of me. Now I need to deliver and to enjoy and work a lot to make it a proud project for everyone.
Thank you very much and congratulations again on F2.
Thank you very much.
Well, guys, it's been brilliant to have you on the show as ever, our last F1 Nation of the year. Let's start by talking about our driver of the day. You're both familiar with this. Charles Leclerc got the vote on the telly. Who is our driver of the day here in Abu Dhabi?
Can you go first?
I would say it's really hard to look past Charles Leclerc. I think in terms of looking at that recovery drive, Lewis Hamilton delivering on a day where it meant the most would be another pick for me as well.
Hang on, you got to choose one of them.
Oh, sorry. Well, I think Charles.
You're going to go for Charles?
Yeah.
Sure.
I'm going to go for Lewis, partly as a sentimental pick in his last race for Mercedes, but also capping it by going around the outside of George Russell on the last lap.
I'm going for Lando Norris. I thought so much was at stake for McLaren. And then, of course, he loses his wingman at turn one.
and does not put a wheel wrong. So there we go. It's nice that we all disagree. Perfect.
What a compliment for Lando Norris, though, that we as just expected that win and he drove with such maturity and completed a lights to flag one-stop masterclass that actually it wasn't that special.
Yeah, I'm just thinking...
it's the ultimate compliment, I think.
Yeah, six months ago, we would have been going, wow, this is amazing from Lando Norris. And now it's just like, another day at the office.
Of course you should, yeah.
That's progress for you, isn't it? Look, before you go, what about a highlight of 2024?
I have one, and it's actually not a competitive highlight. It was Lewis Hamilton driving Senna's car in Brazil. Now, I don't know how that came across to the millions of people who were watching at home, but I can say it at Interlagos, and I'm almost embarrassed to admit this, I started crying tears because it's a car from my childhood. It's a 3.5-litre Honda V10. It was that guy in that car at that track. And then they played the famous piece of music that used to accompany all of Ayrton Senna's victories on Brazilian television. I believe it's called the Victory Theme, the Tema de Vitoria. That was playing in Interlagos. And the crowd was going mad. And every 2 minutes, this Honda V10 McLaren would come past with the famous Hamilton helmet, which looks kind of like Senna. And then he'd have the Brazilian flag. And I started getting a bit dusty. And I had two photographers with me who were shooting it because I was in a very good position. And I said to them, I'm a bit embarrassed. I've got all teary-eyed now. I can't believe I've never had that happen in my life at a Formula One race. And they both looked at me and said, yeah, we are the same. We're trying to hide it. I don't know what's going on here. It was that was a moment when I'm on my Formula One deathbed. That would be one of those moments where
special.
I think, wow, that was incredible.
It was special. How about you, Laura?
I wasn't in Interlagos, so I didn't see it in person. And yeah, that's a big regret for the year. For me, I'm really hard torn between Charles Leclerc at Monaco and Lewis Hamilton at Silverstone. I'm getting in my feelings about it because I cry quite readily, to be honest, Sean. I've cried today. I cried at Monaco. I cried in Monza. I cried at Silverstone. But for me, the Monaco race was terrible. I'm going to just say it. The result was one of the most beautiful things I've seen in sport. The race itself was ghastly. So I'm going to say Lewis Hamilton at Silverstone for what it meant, and then for the race as a whole as well, that was one of the highlights. But those two really beautiful stories and meaningful results will always stand out.
Can I echo that? Can I have three moments of the season? What I said plus what Laura said all together, because they were both brilliant days as well. And seeing Prince Albert breaking royal protocol on the podium, spraying the champagne, because finally one of his subjects had won. Because, of course, he wasn't alive in 1931 when Louis Chiron was first across the line.
Well, I'm going to doff my cap to our 2024 world champion and say what a brilliant race he did in Brazil.
Yes.
Yeah.
P17 to the win in atrocious conditions. It was all happening in Brazil, basically, Sean, wasn't it?
But yeah, that, yeah, yeah. That Sorry, was, Laura. Sorry, you missed that.
I wasn't there. No, I was going to say, I was hard-picked to actually find a race. I was speaking about it and we went through a number of them and Brazil was up there. It was probably because I wasn't there and I was just watching on telly. If I'd been there, I'd have been in bits, I'm sure.
It was, and just Max was, he knew that was the moment he won the world championship as
Stunning.
Well, in reality, wasn't it? Quick one. What are we most looking forward to in 2025?
The emergence of some new rivalries or the emergence of a fully fledged Lando 2.0 championship fight, whether Oscar Piastri can get in there, what can George Russell do? The beef that's emerged between Max and George here, carrying on potentially out onto track through 2025, if Mercedes can give him a car that can consistently deliver, I think will be pretty spectacular for us all to watch. So, yeah, I'd say that the title fight, the driver's title fight, could well be very hotly contested next season.
Well, I know I've sounded pessimistic a few times in my responses during this recording, but if we were to have the second half of this season as the first half of next season, we could be setting up just the most spectacular season in history, where it feels like if that's every week when we're thinking, okay, Ferrari dominate 1 week and then Mercedes get it the next week and then it's Red Bull, and then it's McLaren. That's happening every week. If we discount the first five or six races this year when Max Verstappen and indeed Perez, were basically in a league of their own, what a season we're going to have. I just hope that we get that. Now, I hear that from a lot of fans say, oh, it's going to be amazing next season. We know that there is no guarantee. One of these teams, or indeed one of the other teams, might come up with something that suddenly puts them ahead of the pack. And we might not have that. I've told many fans in hospitality areas this year, drink this in now. There is no guarantee that it will be like this next year, but we hope it's like this next year.
Yeah, yeah. And hey, Melbourne, Lewis in red. Can't
yeah,
wait.
Incredible.
Well, thank you both very much for coming on the show.
Laura. Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm so glad I strong-armed you in the Blind Pig, the pub in Austin, to get on the show in Mexico. And now here I am once again. It's been a joy. This season's been an absolute privilege to be a part of. So thank you for adding this broadcast as well.
And echoing similar sentiments, I apologise for sliding into your DMs all those months saying, can I do this show as well? So here we all are.
F1 Nation will be back next season. Thank you so much to all of you who've listened throughout 2024. We've loved bringing you reaction from the paddock during an incredible season and really appreciate your company. We look forward to bringing you more in 2025. Wishing you a very Merry Christmas and Happy New Year from all of us. F1 Nation is produced by Formula One and Audio Boom Studios.
. 2025 marks the 60th anniversary of the first Honda Formula One victory in the 1965 Mexico Grand Prix. More than half a century later, the drive and innovation that powers Honda racing still inspires everything Honda does, from F1 victories to the Civic Hybrid being named the 2025 North American Car of the Year. Honda Racing is leading the charge when it comes to innovation. And here's where it gets really cool. Every Honda-powered F1 car is packed with sensors, hundreds of them, all feeding live data straight back to the Honda racing team in Sakura, Japan. We're talking about real-time analysis that helps engineers squeeze out every ounce of performance on the track. And the amazing part? That same cutting-edge thinking is making its way into the cars we drive every day, thanks to the expertise of Honda racing engineers. Their work has led to advances like the hybrid technology now used in Honda's consumer vehicles. The 2025 Civic Sedan Hybrid is engineered for fun, from the racetrack to your driveway. Learn more about the Civic and the latest Honda innovations at Honda.com.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.